Welcome back, comedy fans, to an all-new comedy at the Carlson Cast. Get more information and subscribe at carlsoncast.com. Today's episode, another very special episode, of course, it's number 98 with Mr. Mike Vecchione. Today's episode is brought to you by Sapori Cafe and Catering, Rochester's favorite spot for lunch and any of your catering needs. Find them on Facebook and Instagram at Sapori Rochester. Also, Three Heads Brewing, the makers of Rochester's favorite beer. Remember, do good things and always be kind. Except to this guy. He doesn't necessarily deserve it. Mr. Vinny Paulino, it's your host, everybody.
What do I deserve?
I mean, just like a hug so you'll do better, to encourage you a little bit, I think, would be nice. I'm not into punishment. I'm more of a carrot guy than a stick guy, you know.
Good to know.
Yep.
Good to know. Brian isn't here today. You're welcome. It's the Comedy at the Carlson Cast. I'm Vinny Paulino, your host. That's Ross Johnson. Today, he's your co-host.
Yeah.
Yes. Rosser.
Yes.
Me and you today. We're going to right the ship.
Yes. We're going to just, or drive it into an iceberg. We'll see.
Well, either way, we're going down.
Yep.
It's going to be a cool episode. Mike Vecchione is here. If you don't know who he is, you're probably going to be pleasantly surprised.
Good news.
You're going to find out because he's great. And you may know him from doing The Tonight Show, Conan O'Brien. He had a Comedy Central Presents. And he's big on the bonfire. Is that accurate, Shoeless Joe?
That's accurate.
He's Dan Soder's roommate, our pal Dan Soder. So probably some interesting stories there. And we're going to get to know him a little bit this afternoon.
Yeah.
So do me a favor, folks, if you're watching this live, we want to thank you. And you want to text in your questions to be a part of the show. Simply text us 585-484-0265. The text line is open. I also have to throw a shout out to all of the people who are downloading this episode and listening to us on 315 Live. We want to thank you for that.
What is that?
Well, it's a cool, it's basically like a podcast network.
Okay.
And they broadcast out of Syracuse, and they picked us up, and they're throwing us out there. We've been on there for a little bit, and I kind of keep forgetting, like an asshole, and remember to say thanks 315 Live. So there it is. Check him out. I believe we're on there with a guy named Bubba the Love Sponge.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So hey.
Okay. And
cool
people in Botswana, thank you for continuing to listen.
Yes, that's right. We're number two in Ghana this week. So
okay.
Thank you for that.
Nice.
Thank you. That is a true fact. Kind of sad.
Number two.
But you know, we'll get there next week.
Yeah. I mean,
we can't be upset about being number two.
Right.
Okay, so let's talk about what's going on tonight at Comedy at the Carlson. I'm excited. Hit my PC, Shoeless Joe. Tonight, October 11th, New Comic Night returns. We are going to be in the Rickles Room. I am going to be your host. Ross won't be there. Brian won't be there. It's going to be awesome.
It's going to be fine.
20 spots available. There are 3 to 4 minute spots. We are going to give them out by drawing. So if you show up tonight at 7 o'clock, you could come back to me anytime you want. If you come tonight at 7 o'clock, you're going to write your name on a piece of paper, throw it in this jar, and then I am going to, at 7:30 at the start of the show, draw 20 names, and those 20 people are on.
And you know, what an opportunity. I mean, you know, if you have any inclination and think you have any talent, what an opportunity to get up on stage and try. And it's the kind of thing where, you know this, Vinny, like, if you're doing comedy, if you're doing it particularly the first time, you're there's a good chance you're not going to be great. But you might be, so you have nothing to lose. Go and do it. You've got the practice. You've got the experience. Or maybe you're great, and it turns out that you've just been waiting for this opportunity your whole life.
And you know what? I'm not necessarily worried about selling comics to show up tonight, because I feel like we're going to have a really great crowd. Because you know, the comics really we want to see them, and they know we want to see them, and we don't have a lot of opportunities for them to get in here. So
yeah.
I think we're going to do pretty well with comics tonight. But what I want to see is an awesome audience. That's what I care about. And one of the neat things that we've done about this show, as opposed to any other show at Comedy at the Carlson, it's free admission, Ross.
Free admission.
That's Walk amazing. Right in.
That fits my budget perfectly.
Right.
Even Joe could come to this.
If his car worked.
I mean, if he could get here. You know, he's got to get here. He'd have to walk, but yeah.
Oh, poor Shoeless Joe. He's a mess today.
Idiot.
Poor kid. He had to get a ride in.
Oh.
But he still showed up, so you're MVP in my book.
Yes, I mean, the truck pulled up, he jumped out from under the tarp, and it was fine.
Yeah.
So it was good.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure he slept back there.
Well, you know, he's efficient.
Yes, he is. So we'll see you tonight at New Comic Night. I am very much looking forward to being back in the swing of things with that. We're going to announce more dates. We are going to have one a month until the end of the year. So there'll be one in November, there'll be one in December.
So like two.
Yeah, we'll have two more after this. But this is a big one. We want to see you out tonight. It's free. Tell your friends. Come on out. And we're going to keep it a tight, awesome show.
Yeah, and if you're in the audience, you could be here at the beginning of a new career. You know, so, you could be like, I remember blah, blah when.
I was talking to somebody who is a spends a lot of time with comedy management and stuff like that. And they are referring to our club as a top five club in the country.
Wow. Okay.
And that's amazing.
Was that Mark you were talking to?
I'll never tell who. Okay. Well, he was there.
Okay, sure.
But a top five club. We're opening up the doors tonight.
Yeah.
Come on in, kids.
Yeah.
Come play.
It's amazing.
Come out and play, yay.
Now it's creepy, but.
Yes, it was.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. But you got to get out here. We're going to have fun tonight. Mike Vecchione is going to be in here in a few minutes, so remember, send in your text messages. And if you like the show and you listen a lot, can you do me a favor and please rate and review us? Brian's not here. This is a good episode to judge us by. So, you know, preferably five stars, guys. Come on.
And it's the number one thing you can do to support, you know, if you want to support the podcast. We're not asking for your money.
Yeah, we don't do Patreon.
If you want to send some money, that's fine. You know, you can drop off a check. That's fine.
But Shoeless Joe will gladly accept it.
Absolutely. We accept rides.
We might actually have to do like a charity event for Joe at some point soon.
That'd be cute.
It would probably not be kind of ugly. It'd just be a bunch of 19-year-old skater kids show up. Where are you, Joe? Let's see you. Where are you? Yeah, there you are. Show everybody how happy you look today. This kid's almost dead. He's dying, folks. Barely, he needs food.
Barely hanging in there.
All right. We'll be back with Mike Vecchione in a few minutes. Text line's open. Let's tell everybody about the shows we have coming at the Carlson before we bring him in. Go ahead and do that, Joe. Hey, everybody. We got some big shows coming up at Comedy at the Carlson. Tell the people, Ross.
Of course, coming up right about now, it's Mr. Mike Vecchione. He's here from October 10th to the 12th. The Hodge Twins are going to be here October 13th. That's double your fun.
Double your fun.
Sashir Sameta will be here October 17th to 19th. Excited about that one. Mr. Dan Viola is going to be here October 18th in the Rickles Room. Yeah. Michelle Wolf is going to be here October 25th and the 26th. You love her. Rocky LaPorte, November 1st and 2nd, is going to be here. He's got the receding hairline, etc. Bobby Slayton is here November 7th to the 9th.
Look at you throwing stones.
You know. Mr. Mike Racine is going to be here November 8th in the Rickles Room. Gary Goldman is going to be here November 14th to the 16th.
Look at that head of hair.
Look at that hand. Vicky Barbalak, November 21st to 23rd. We love her so much. Thanksgiving Eve, you can come and come down with Dr. Dirty John Valby. That'll be fun. Chris Allen, November 29th and 30th. Chris Frangiola is going to be here December 5th to the 7th. Of course, Pete Carielli. December 12th to 14th. Carielli. April Macy, December 19th to 21st. We love her too. Rich Voss, December 26th to 28th, with his assortment of fun hats. Tim Meadows, January 2nd to the 4th. That's all!
That's pretty good, right?
There's more coming! That's just for now! There's more stuff coming later! You just keep checking back!
Yeah, carlsoncomedy.com. Hey, everybody, we are back joining us in studio. You may know him from his comedy album, The Worst Kind of Thoughtful. It was, I don't know if you know this, Ross. Best comedy album of the year. 2018 by Vulture.
That's incredible.
You've seen him on Jimmy Fallon on The Tonight Show. You've seen him on Conan O'Brien. It's Mike Vecchione, everybody. Good morning.
Thank you guys for having me. I appreciate it.
Oh,
that's
no.
A good angle.
We are way more thankful for having you. Ross, fix the man's camera.
Okay, I'm not good at this.
You're not good at a lot of things, but you're still here.
Down, you think?
Yeah, down a little bit. There you go.
There we go.
Are you comfortable?
Yeah, no, it's great.
All right. Beautiful.
I did it.
This is like a webcast. No one cares. Like, it's like they don't do this at the news. They don't do this at the other stations.
At normal talk shows, the sidekick doesn't do tech support for the cameras, usually.
This feels like a little bit of a casting couch type situation.
Well, I'm glad that you wore something with a zipper. Glad to have you.
Glad to have you.
Now, tell us why you want to get into comedy.
I thought you were going to like give me $100 and take off my top. No?
Oh, no, it's just a spot at the club. There's no cash. It's just a spot at the
Well, see, here's the thing. We're just going to talk until I get you to the point where you're taking your shirt off and you don't even notice.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's
reverse
a skill.
Psychology.
It's a skill.
You look like somebody who'd be able to pull that off.
You're just saying he looks like a creep.
I'm not. I didn't say it. Literally.
I like how, here's the problem, Mike. This guy, he's a sunny side up kind of individual where he's just always trying to be positive and supportive,
right,
even when he shouldn't be.
Yeah.
Like, he didn't think he was just calling me a creep. He just thought, I bet you he would be good at that. So it's like, you know, I can't get too mad at him.
I feel the tension between you guys, though. I feel it's bubbling.
That's why we have to have the table between us.
I'm going
to
stab him later. It's going to be good. So,
and I'm going to kiss him.
Oh, that's great.
Thanks, Ross. See, positive. Sunny side up. That's great.
That'll make the headlines. The Rochester Tribune.
If we only had a Tribune.
Right.
We have a Chronicle.
Oh, the Rochester Chronicle.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not even that. It's just called the Democrat and Chronicle,
which
is a terrible name for a newspaper.
The Democratic Chronicle?
Democrat.
Chronicle.
Right.
And
Chronicle.
What about the Republicans in this town?
A lot of them. It's kind of a purple town.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
I think they have their own paper, probably, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. It's like Fox something.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's the Republican paper.
Yeah. The Fox and Chronicle.
The Fox and Trump.
So is this your first time in Rochester, Mike?
My first time in Rochester. Actually, I opened for T.J. Miller a few years ago at your Rochester Institute of Technology.
Okay.
And, that was really fun because we went out and we hit the bars and stuff. But I've never been to the club. I've never really spent a lot of time in Rochester, so I've never been to the club. Yeah.
Right. You're an Ohio guy, right?
Yeah, I'm answering the question like I'm on the Senate Judiciary Committee.
Have you not ever been in the city of Rochester, sir?
Technically, sir, I'd like to take the fifth on that. I'm from Youngstown, Ohio, originally.
Okay.
And then we moved back and forth between Youngstown and Florida. Boca Raton, and I graduated from high school in Boca Raton, Florida, and then went to college at Penn State University, and then moved to Philly. I lived in Philly for 8 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you've been all up and down the East Coast.
Yes. Club and college.
I love it. Now make sure that whoever your MC is writes that down.
No, sometimes they go plural, and I go, that's incorrect. Club and college. I've played one club, one college.
That's it.
That's my experience.
One of them was in Florida. The other one was in Pennsylvania.
Club and college.
You were an athlete.
Mm-hmm.
That's all of your bios talk very highly of your athletic prowess.
Yeah, I wasn't like as naturally gifted as maybe it would seem. I played football in high school and wrestled in high school and then wrestled a little bit in college, but truth be told, I really wasn't good enough. I went to Penn State, and Penn State's very, very good wrestling, so I really wasn't good enough to be there. But I did it for a year, and then I just didn't. My sophomore year, I decided not to. I walked on. So my sophomore year, I decided not to go back out for the team.
Right.
You know, but I was still very good friends with a lot of those guys, and I lived with a bunch of them, so I was still close to the sport. But just I chose not to do it again. I mean, right. I got beat up a lot, so it was. But it was a great experience.
Do you know a lot of other comics that, like, were doing college athletics? Because I really can't think of any off the top of my head.
Well, one comes to mind. I just saw him this week. He's one of my favorite people, which is Greg Warren. Do you guys know him? He was actually a successful version of what I was doing. He was an All-American from Missouri. So he's a great comic and a great guy, and he was also a great wrestler. And people sometimes, like, it's so funny how time plays into it because people are like, you and Warren should wrestle. I'm like, Warren was an All-American. Like, I couldn't even make – I was a practice room guy.
Yeah.
Greg Warren was an All-American, which is top eight in the country in his weight class. So it's like he's heads and tails above me. So I think it's really funny that people think we were on the same – anytime anybody says that, I correct them immediately. It's like we were not on the same level. You know, he was on a much higher level than I was.
It's compressed down in the bio. You know, you did wrestling, so.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. It's like the less information, it kind of looks the same, but mm-hmm. I'm quick to correct people because it's a slap in the face to him, really.
Right.
You know?
I'll tell you, though, it's kind of interesting because the way comics are stereotyped in America, like, I feel like a lot of them think that, like, comics are all ex-jocks and kind of, like, bullyish, but it's really like the opposite. We were all most
outcasts.
Of us are the nerds. Mostly the nerds.
Even the guys who played sports are outcasts at some level, you know
right.
what I mean? You wouldn't do this if you weren't an outcast at some level. Yeah.
Right. So I just always found it interesting people who, you know, were into athletics and kind of ran in that direction in their lives coming into the comedy world where it's like the complete opposite.
Well, I find that the people in athletics, the people who play individual sports gravitate towards stand-up comedy. Tennis, golf, swimming, wrestling, any kind of individual sport, people are gravitate towards comedy. It's kind of the same mentality in the sense of mindset and being able to take a loss, being able to recover, you know, making yourself better, you know, no one to blame but yourself. You
That's
know?
A really interesting observation. Yeah. And there's also not just that, there's the competitive nature of it. Is I'm going to go out there and do the best.
I have good insights. I'm not dumb like you guys were saying before the show. Sorry.
How did you hear that?
I heard you guys talking outside. Yeah. Like, is this dumb going to come? It's like hurtful stuff, guys.
Yeah, bring in Warren's lackey. Get Warren's wrestling dummy in here.
Yeah, the guy that Warren beat up.
Yeah.
We like to neg the guests first to put them on their, you know, the back foot. So,
you're in college.
It's a good strategy.
It is. Yeah, it's work.
You're in college. You decide, hey, I'm not going to wrestle anymore.
Yeah, it was a hard decision for me because I never quit anything in my life before. And technically, I guess I didn't. I just didn't go back out for the team my sophomore year. But yeah, and looking back on it now, I look at the other way. I'm like, how did I do this? Was so hard. Like, I can't even believe I did this for any amount of time. Like, the weight cutting, the practices, the brutality of it. And you know, I understand why I wasn't getting any money for it, like, scholarship-wise. But still, to do all that work for no kind of compensation, it's like, I mean, but to get into the school.
Right.
So, I mean, I guess I did, you know, I did my year to get into the school, and they got some good use out of me there. But as far as, like, going forward, it's like, yeah, I can't do this for, like, no compensation, like, no books, no kind of scholarship. So, I mean, that's what kind of made sense to me.
Going into college, what did you want to do? Was it athletics?
I figured let me go to a Penn State, and then if athletics is extra. So if I successful athletic, I wanted to be successful, but if I was successful athletically, that's good. But even if I'm not, I looked at it the same way when I moved to New York. I'm like, I'll do stand-up comedy. And if I'm not successful at it and I quit, then I'll just be in New York City. It'll be great. You know, it'd be great to be in New York City.
So comedy didn't come into it till a little further down the line. Yeah, what was plan B when you were like, okay, I'm not going to go out for the team anymore? What were you thinking you were going
to
do?
I was thinking I'll get to, like, enjoy my life. Like, I'll get to, like, experience college a little bit. Yeah, because I was so tired from, like, the workouts and all the stuff. And there is camaraderie there, so I did miss that. But it's like I was so run down and exhausted. Like, I couldn't really focus. I was passing my classes, but I couldn't focus. Like, I really got to focus on my classes and learning and, like, all the corny stuff that people – but and college life, like – you know, I got to, like, really enjoy it. So for the next 3 years, I really, like, enjoyed college, my college experience. I know that sounds like however it sounds, but it's really true. Because the first year was so hard and so brutal that the next 3 years were, I just enjoyed it, really enjoyed it.
See, that's interesting because, like, do you think the discipline from, like, being an athlete and wrestling really kind of helped you enjoy it? Because, like, once it was all gone,
right,
you still knew where to put all your effort into the right places,
right,
but then you could, like, relax.
I wasn't a guy, like, guys come out of that kind of intense situation, and some of them just, like, never work out again. They drink, they do drugs, they eat like crazy. And I just didn't. I was like, I lost weight from wrestling, and so I just maintained discipline and went to the gym. But I wasn't, like, nearly as run down as I was when I was actually wrestling.
Wild. All right.
Yeah, yeah. So it turned out, yeah, the discipline thing was huge. I learned a lot discipline-wise. Everybody has a different experience from something like a sport like wrestling. Like, in my situation, like, some guys I wrestled with were so talented. They, like, were 3- and 4-time state champs. Like, I was a runner-up in Florida, which was not a good state at the time for wrestling, that good of a state. And, but the guys who are, like, 3- and 4-time state champs and, like, really super talented, they had a different experience in wrestling than I did. It came much easier to them. Like, I had to really work and grind to be any kind of good. And from that, you gained a different perspective, and it helps you with different things in your life. The guys who are naturally good at it and were just had all success, like, it's a weird thing because it's not going to benefit them as much in terms of when they encounter future adversities.
So did that discipline that you got there, does that help you in your comedy career? Is that something that you still feel like
I think so. I mean, comics are inherently lazy,
right?
So I mean,
it does
help in terms of, like, not getting too caught up, and it also helps with accepting things that you can't control in the business, which we've all had to experience, where it's like, oh, I can't control this. and it's a, or I can't get into this club, or I can't get this TV show, or I'm being blocked on this or that, or they're not interested in me. It's you draw on the experience from, okay, I just have to, I'll just keep working on myself and keep improving, and then something will open up somewhere. But dealing with loss is a accepting loss and having to figure out another way to be successful is one of the things I've learned from it.
Yeah. Well, and that's huge. I mean, that's something some people never get. And yeah. It's, you know, in the comedy business, that's one you kind of need.
Well, right. You know how many people, I'm sure you've seen it, Mike, where people come into comedy, start doing a couple of open mics, and the second they get any rejection, it's like they're completely angry at the world.
Yeah, yeah. It throws them into a tailspin, yeah.
Yeah, it
but
really does.
And not people who just start, but in comedians' defense, it's really a challenge not to get bitter by the business sometimes, because it'll throw things at you, and it's not fair. It's not a fair business. So you'll be angry, but I understand the bitterness is what I'm trying to say. I understand it, but it's not the right path. It's not the right path to let it consume you. Mm-hmm. It's the right path to be like, okay, let me just, you know, acknowledge that it's there, and I'll just work on my craft. And it'll just be what it's going to be. You know what I mean?
See, that to me is the only approach to comedy that makes any sense at all, is if you just concentrate on being as good as you possibly can be on stage.
But I mean,
there's a million variables.
Right. But I can see why guys get bitter. I can see why they get bitter. Because some guys are very good and they get passed over a lot, and for one reason or another. And people who maybe aren't as talented are leaping over them. And there's huge financial ramifications to that also.
100%.
So I do understand the bitterness. I get it. But it's still the wrong path to be consumed by it, and then to like stop, let that slow your work down and let it affect you mentally. Like, it's still the wrong path to be consumed by bitterness.
It's almost, what's the motto with AA? Focus on what you can control.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Focus on what you control, and that's your act. So
yeah. Focus on your act, and like, but keep trying, like keep pushing, keep trying. If one avenue is blocked, there's so many platforms out there. That's the good news about today. It's like there's so many platforms out there. So if this network doesn't want you, or this show doesn't want you, it's like, all right, I'm going to have to do this another way. Yeah. And even as far as like, I'll just have to build my own thing, build a podcast, go out, and with social media now, it's like you can go out and get the fans yourself.
Right. You know? Now, let's talk about comedy. Where does comedy come into the picture for you? Like, I mean, how old of a guy were you when you decided to step on stage? It was after college, I take it.
Yeah, it was after college. I was with, I was engaged, and I was with my fiance. We were living together, and I was teaching. I was working at behavioral schools, and I did a comedy class, and then so I wrote 5 minutes, and then at the graduation, you do your 5 minutes,
right?
And then I just never did it. I didn't do it for a few years. You know, I just did it like that once.
Tell me
and
about then, your comedy class. I'm interested in that.
Yeah,
I don't want to gloss over that.
It was
that's
a
fascinating
long time
to me.
Ago, so I don't remember much, but I just remember the basics of write five minutes, and he was like, clean, keep it clean. It was in Pennsylvania, so he was like, keep it clean, and 5 minutes, and which isn't bad advice, and I did it, and it was whatever it was. It was fine, but I didn't have the hunger, because I was like, we're gonna get married, and this is not gonna be conducive. This lifestyle is not conducive to what I'm trying to do, you know, with my career. I was teaching, wanted to be a teacher, and marriage and stuff. So I just did it that once, and then we broke up, and then I was very like hurt by the whole breakup, and I was finishing up my master's in special education, and I just started going to open mics again. Well, I never went to open mics before. I just did it that one time.
Right.
And then I started going to open mics, and so that's really, I think that's when you start coming, when you start going to open mic every week.
So like, it took a broken heart.
Or two a week. But the broken heart really helped, because I was in such a bad place mentally. Like, I didn't care about I didn't care about bombing or rejection. And I wasn't funny right away. And I just kept doing it because I was like, oh, I'm getting my master's in education. This is like a public speaking exercise, and it'll help me somewhere along the line. I'm never going to make a career of this, but it'll help me somewhere along the line, public speaking wise. Like, I don't know where I'm going to land, but this is good for me.
A lot of that's why people do like, what is it, Toastmasters and stuff like that?
Yeah.
All those clubs where they go and they practice talking in public.
Right. Yeah. But there's no better practice than getting up and trying to make people laugh at an There's no, because there's no safety net there. It's trial by fire, and that's what I did. I was part of the Laugh House, which was on South Street. That's the club I came out of.
In Philly, right?
In Philadelphia, yep. Yeah. And I would just go there on Wednesday, and sometimes I would get on Thursdays, and I'd go to watch the shows on the weekends. I just had nothing else in my life at the time. And really, so I had the time to, where I didn't have the time before, and I had kind of a comfortable life situation. I was thrown into a thing where my life situation was very uncomfortable, and I had to deal with the pain of the breakup, and that's how I dealt with it. I just threw myself into stand-up comedy.
How crazy of a sentence is this? True. Most comedians thrive on the adversity,
right,
and they really grow out of it, I feel like. So, like, how crazy is it that happy people aren't funny? Like, really, people who are, like, living very happy lives,
yeah, yeah,
they're just not good at comedy. I don't know. It's weird.
I think Chris Rock said the thing that if ignorance is bliss, the opposite must be true.
Well, and it's
you know what I mean? So if you're noticing everything like comedians are supposed to, like, and you're breaking everything down, chances are you're going to be miserable.
Quite the pessimist.
Yeah.
Well, and it's like you said, too. I mean, there are a lot of different paths, but...
Intelligence is misery.
You sort of went into it almost with nothing to lose in the sense
right.
of you weren't... You know, you were at a point where you sort of didn't care if people didn't like you, it right. sounds like. So, I mean, I think that's a... There are a lot of different paths, but... I think that's probably helpful.
It's a constructive thing to do,
right,
especially
right.
in a time when you're dealing with that kind of stuff.
Right. I don't want to say I didn't care. I was just in a place where it was like, I wasn't that sensitive to it. I was right. like, no, I'm going to keep. You know, you have that dog in you a little bit where you're like, I'm just going to keep doing. I'm just going to keep doing it, and I'll. And it wasn't like I was trying to fail. I was like, no. When I did fail, I was like, no, I'm going to figure out better jokes and work harder. But I had. You know, I had a little bit of freedom. I felt a little bit more freedom. Like, yeah, I have nothing. No one cares about me, so I don't have anything to lose.
I'm always curious about this. So when you started out doing those open mics, and this is very subjective just from your point of view, but how were you? I mean, do you feel like you were awful for a long time? Do you feel like you got up on stage and you're like, I kind of get this pretty
quickly?
Nah,
I could put sentences together. I wasn't, like, flustered or anything like mm-hmm. that. So I had some a little bit of presence about me. But it's just like I wasn't hitting the jokes right. I wasn't developed enough comedically, and you know, new material now is still like that. Like I'm trying to feel my way through it. I have a gut, like we all do. We have a gut feeling something's right. funny, but I don't know. And then when it doesn't work, and I think it's funny, it's like, okay, there's something wrong with the way I'm phrasing this or the way I'm working it, or if something's not developed enough, I listen back to it or something that even now and I go, okay, there's it's a jumping off point. There's better jokes here. You know, there's better jokes here. I just have to figure out what they are. And then it helps to talk it out with other comics. That really helps. And journaling, like all this stuff, like it just it all helps. So I wasn't like I was putting sentences together and all that. I just couldn't I was having trouble finding a style.
Mm-hmm.
And then finding the funny, and then even if it's, you know, we all get levels of laughter. If it's moderately funny, it's a chuckle. It's like there's something stronger there, or you know, it's a big setup into a punch. It's like, oh, there's jokes on the way to the punch, and then there's tags. Mm-hmm. So it's like, you know, it's just listening back and like, and then trying to rework and just. It helps to be a crazy person, kind of like an obsessive person, because if you obsess and obsess and obsess, then you can make it really good. I find that.
Well, learning that you are kind of an obsessive person
right.
makes a lot more sense after watching a lot of your comedy.
Yeah.
Like, I'm starting to kind of, I don't want to say, like, understand, but, like, you have a very specific style, I think.
Right.
It's very soft-spoken.
Right.
It's very intelligent, but you brought up breaking things down. You are fantastic at breaking things down.
Oh, thank you.
You really are.
Thank
like you.
You,
I was playing off of your album for Ross earlier, the Megabus bit, for
right,
example.
Right.
It is. I saw you do it on, you know, the Tonight Show.
Right.
But you did just a little bit of it, you know. But then you did. It's like a 2-minute bit
right,
where
right,
it's
right.
ba boom, ba boom, ba boom, ba
yeah.
boom, and you've broken down so many different aspects of one thing.
Right.
To me, that's. Great comedy writing,
right.
but also the signs of someone who's a little obsessive. So
yeah,
makes sense though.
Well, because my car did get stolen, so I did I've taken the Megabus a lot, and I actually do like it. It's really a good. I mean, I should be their spokesperson, but I
think you might have been already.
I did. I've taken a lot, and when I was would take it to gigs, I would be like, you know how you get the situation where you're like, there's something funny here. There's something very funny here, and I'm not talking about a little bit. There's a lot of funny shit here, and so I just kept writing about it while I was on the bus, and then I got like a long bit from. Also, I'm heavily influenced by Dave Attell is one of my favorite.
Yeah. Films.
So I've watched him over the years, and he is. I mean, his style is like jokes from everywhere. Like he'll hit you. He'll hit two jokes on the way to a huge punchline and then two tags. It's like, it's just, he's unbelievable. So that style also appealed to me where it's like, just, it's almost like you're taking a story. I like the fact that you take a story and you break it down into joke form. That's why I really love Family Guy too. Family Guy is like, they have a story, but it's in joke. You're telling a story in joke form.
Exactly.
Gaffigan does that also, which he's unbelievable at it. He takes a thing and just breaks it down and just goes, just jokes. You know what I mean?
I read somebody gave me a book a long time ago by a guy named Gene Perrett. Do you know what I'm talking about? He used to write for Carson. Mm-mm. And he did this, there was this exercise, this writing exercise that was really helped me and I thought was really cool for breaking down stuff. And it was just basically pick what you're talking about.
Right.
Write down everything you can in a list form that you could think of possibly that's going on in that place. And then start writing down the opposites. What wouldn't be there?
Oh, wow.
How would this not work? And your brain just starts crazy firing in different directions.
That's very cool. I'm going to try that now.
Yeah, I don't know. It just like, it helps me tremendously breaking down. And I'm wondering if you do anything similar or do you have your own way?
I used to be a pure, my first album was just pure joke. I was a pure joke guy. And then on my second album, I was like, okay, these jokes are good, but they're kind of impersonal. There's an impersonal vibe to them where I was like, oh, I need some marriage jokes. I need some gambling jokes. I need some single guy jokes. I need some racial jokes. Like, that was my attitude before. Now it's like, okay, those are the worst thing that can happen to me at the end of a set. Like, one of the worst things is you do well, you kill, and then people come up to you and go, you're very clever. It's like, no, I don't want that. Like, I don't want that. And I was getting some of that, and I would kill, but people would like, clever is a way of saying I get what you're doing mentally, but right. I'm not emotionally moved by anything that you're doing. So and
there's a million clever comics.
Yeah, there's a million clever comics, and somebody like Sebastian, I learned from watching him because he's emotionally affecting people where they're going like, and he didn't get any like, I mean to my knowledge, I might be speaking out of school, but it didn't look like he got any like TV help or anything like that. It's just it was very grassroots. People grabbing their relatives and going, we got to see this guy. And so he affected people in such an emotional way where it's like just selling out like stadiums now. So there's
he
something
was just in
that.
Town like a week or two
ago.
It's
unreal. So I learned from that to be like, oh, maybe you have this skill set of joke writing. It's like maybe make it more personal. So I started journaling then and writing it. Just journal. It doesn't have to be funny. Just like stuff that happens. There's a million funny things that happen during the day. Some of them are deeply emotional. Some of them are just not. But it's a good jumping off point to make my act more personal. So I can take the joke writing and then use the stuff like in my everyday life. Because if it's happening to me, it's happening to other people.
At least three or four.
Right.
Right, you know?
Absolutely.
So it's very interesting. I really respect comics who can do pure jokes. I really respect that because that is a lot of hard work, if they're good jokes, obviously.
Right, right.
But pure jokes.
I find them to be more meaningful if they're personal.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Agreed.
Yeah.
But I also think that, you know, there's just something to be said for that. But I think the natural progression is to want to get personal with the crowd over a while, right? Just because, like, you know, when you start off, you're just looking for a laugh.
Right.
But then evolving
right.
into, listen, I'm going to share something with you,
yes.
is the real challenge to the art of comedy,
right.
I think. I think it's how you step off from being like an amateur to being somebody who, like you said with Sebastian, who affects people. In your career, though, when did you start to see success take off for you? Was it when you started getting personal? Were there things that you were doing that worked you towards it?
It's been in steps, though. Like you said, it was like, it's... you start off just trying to get laughs. So it's like, any way I can get a laugh, I'm going to try to get a laugh. And then you realize, oh, I'm good at jokes, so let me try to get a laugh through these jokes. And then it's like, okay, I'm getting a laugh through jokes right now, but it's ringing kind of empty. I'd like to take this skill set that I have of jokes and then make it more personal. So it's like, okay, now I've made it more personal, but now the jokes are kind of standalones. I wonder if I could take a situation and just write a ton of jokes about the situation, like the bus, or maybe I can take people on a journey through the jokes.
Yeah,
you know, because a lot of people are telling stories. There's very few guys who could tell great stories that are punched up all the way through. My friend Big J Okerson is one guy who's a great storyteller, but the stories are punched up all the way through. Nate Bargatze is another friend of mine who's the clean version of that. He can tell stories that are just hilarious, punched up all the way through stories. So, and I have a different style than both those guys, but I figured, yeah, if I can, plus it's easier to do an hour when you have these corner longer bits that you could just go to and you can break down.
I couldn't agree with you more on that. On that, you know, when it's true, it's easier to remember. Yes. You know, when it's coming from a place
of an acorn of truth,
as opposed to, oh, what was that joke about the Chinese restaurant?
Yeah. A joke here, a joke there. Then you're trying to figure out how to construct the set, and then, you know, my personal favorite thing is like having jokes that go somewhere and that you could pull out, and you use them in a late night, and then you can push them back in, and you could do the whole chunk in an hour. It's like great to have that flexibility. You know what I mean?
So you're a single guy, right?
I'm single. I have a girlfriend.
Right.
Yeah.
But you know, you've been on the road for quite a while.
Vinny, this isn't what this is for, buddy. We're not picking up people right now. Could you just relax with that?
So on the road. You know, I didn't think you would make
me
miss Brian today.
It hurts me.
But wow, boy, did you.
Boy, that did silence you just cut my heart. Yeah. Just shattered me.
Yeah, well, right. You know, think before you
speak. I deserved
it.
That's fine.
So, you know, traveling on the road by yourself and, you know, maybe not being in a relationship, that's got to be really, really hard for you. What's that like? What's that been like?
When I was on the road not in a relationship?
Yeah. How? I mean, is that easier? Is it harder?
I mean, I'm so happy. Like, I'm great, you know, based in New York City. So it's like, I know how hard it is. Like, it's for those people listening who are not comics or I don't know. It's very competitive to get road dates now.
Right.
Like, it used to be a thing where it's like, I think back in the day, before I started comedy, it was a thing like, oh, I'll try to get a TV show. If I don't get a TV show, I always can just work the road to make money. I think that was more of the mindset maybe back then. But that's not the mindset now. The mindset now is like, it's very competitive to work the road. So I'm appreciative of the dates that I have. And, you know, I'm trying to give the crowds, you know, on the what, you know, they paid for, but also trying to grow comedically. But it gets I've been on the road a lot this month, and it like gets lonely and it wears you down. It does wear you down, but it's same, you know, you go back to that discipline. Like, what's it, you know, I'm grateful to have the work. You know, there's a lot of guys who don't who don't have it. There's a lot of comics out there, you know.
There's a buddy of mine who does cruise ships, and he said, somebody asked him the other day, comedy's like, you know, I'm gonna try to work the road, and he was like, what road? It's not wrong. Like, you have to have some serious TV credits.
Yeah, it's working the road. I don't know, if I was starting now, maybe I would do things the same way, but I think I would pay attention more to social media. I would pay attention to more to maybe writing sketches, working on a podcast, something to gain fans while still trying to get better comedically.
You can pop
off of something and then have a following before you're comedically ready. Now that's like a thing. And if you have a different set of problems, then I mean, it's good that you have a following. But now it's like, okay, so you have to
deliver.
Develop comedically. And I don't know what the answer is. You take some of your funny friends on the road, or if you're a celebrity, I'm trying to think that if I was a celebrity and I could get the draw, I would just bring funny friends and I would host to get better comedically and let my funny friends who are unknowns, let them have work. And because then people are getting what they want. They want to see you. You're getting better. And plus, these guys who are killers that nobody knows, they get exposure. So that's the kind of everybody wins.
You need to get into management, my friend.
No, that's a great thing. I mean,
yeah,
you know, but I don't know.
Can I plug your podcast real quick? Because
yeah,
it's pretty good.
Great.
No disrespect.
Thank you.
You
can
get it on wherever fine podcasts are sold.
Right.
Make sure you get that. You guys are doing pretty good with that.
Yeah, we're, we that's I mean, that takes a lot of time and energy. And we have a studio, but Gas Digital's great. It's a great studio. And Ralph Sutton and Louis J. Gomez. And they offer us all kinds of support. And even with the support, though, it's very time-consuming.
Yeah.
To promote and also to... We have segments in our podcast because I feel like everybody does the comic hang thing. And a lot of guys do it well. But I figured... To separate ourselves a little bit, you know, to do segments that we put our segments up on YouTube independently.
Yeah, I've noticed that. I actually watched a bunch of them this week. I like watching the videos that you make comics read jokes. That made me laugh quite a bit. It was very silly. Where you had like Dave Attell reading jokes stuff like that.
Yeah, distasteful joke. I'm gonna do another version of that. But it's to promote the podcast. We have these joke books. Like you can't, no one can. These joke books are like racist, sexist, whatever. There were jokes about everybody, though. Irish, right. Italians, women, all kinds of stuff. So those jokes are forbidden now. So I figured it would be funny to have, if you're a member of whatever group you are, to read the joke that's offensive to your group.
They're on YouTube.
And then pay them with whatever is stereotypical. Irish, pay them with whiskey. If they're Italian, pay them with a meatball. The first one I did with my mother, so it's like no one can be like, oh, you're just doing other... No, I do Italians. She was the first one I love more than anybody. But, you know, to show it's like these things were not meant to be vicious or mean. They were meant to just poke fun at our differences.
Yeah. It's an art form that I don't think is coming back anytime soon.
No, it doesn't appear to be. But I will say this, that there is there's platforms that are opening up for that. You know what I mean? Because people, there's a reason those joke books are popular. They're popular because they're funny, and they're not, I don't see them as mean-spirited. I see them as just making fun of our differences, which used to be a thing that would happen. So hopefully, you know, if it gets blocked on certain platforms, other platforms will open up, and if people want it, then they'll go to those other platforms to listen to it or watch it.
It's truthfully, it was an interesting concept, I thought, because, you know, there's always the conversation about, is this punching down or not? But if you have a person from that
group
telling the joke,
and they're
it's not punching
it.
Down. Yeah, it's not. It just becomes words. Right. It just becomes a joke,
right?
Is what it's supposed to be to begin with.
Right. You're not telling a joke behind their back. It's like them reading their own joke, which I find to be funny. You reading a joke about your own group. There's something funny in that.
Right. And maybe the art form isn't as lost. Maybe there's something that could be built there. Where I mean, I could poke fun at my family all day long. I could poke fun at being a fat white guy in an Italian family and make fun of whatever.
Right.
But that stuff coming from me is fine, but coming from somebody else isn't, which is so weird. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like maybe you could write about yourself and write about your people's struggle however you see fit, and that's completely acceptable. But if anybody else does it, it's immediately off limits and gone.
I don't know. I think there's a way to do it. I guess you could scrutinize anything and be like, oh, this is mean-spirited. It's like, but I mean, I guess if you've, I guess you could do that. Yeah, that's the problem. It's like you could take something that's not meant to be mean-spirited, that's just meant to poke fun, and you could take it out of context and be like, look at how wrong this is. You know, but it's comedy.
Yeah. So you famously live with Dan Soder.
Yes.
That's kind of interesting.
It's great.
Is it good? Do you get a nice rub off of that, or you get a little some extra?
No, he's fantastic. He's one of my best friends. And we're like brothers, really. So I love living with them, and we're both on the road and in the city, and it just helps to have somebody, a good friend there that you can bounce stuff off of, whether it's jokes or situations or whatever. And he's getting ready to tape his HBO hour, and I couldn't be happier for him. Like, that's a guy where he's had success, he's worked super hard, he's come up through the club system the way that I have, and he's gotten success, and it's deserved. Mm-hmm. Like, it's really deserved success, and he's one of the guys where it's like the industry really got this one right. He's just very talented, he's very good, he has a great work ethic, and I think his hour is going to be unbelievable.
It's good for your soul to see that, isn't it?
It's really good because it restores hope when the good guys win, when people who have sacrificed, and he's not the only one, it's like when people have sacrificed and come through the clubs, you know, in a in an authentic way in terms of like building an act and building, taking losses and failing and retooling. And those guys win, or women, they win. Like, it makes me happy because that means there's hope for all of us.
The whole time that we've talked today, the one thing that I found really impressive that I've wanted to tell you that I picked up on is we've talked about today is doing the work.
Right.
It's all we've talked about is putting in the work.
Right.
Which not a lot of people talk about, but
yeah, because it's not sexy.
It's not sexy.
It's not sexy. It doesn't cause people to tweet. It does not. It's not controversial. It's kind of boring. It's like how I was watching the Patriots last night. Like they're unique to me. They're like a situation where it's like if you watch them deal with the media, they minimize everything, and what they're saying is not false. But it's very unsexy and and they keep it. Even if somebody asks them an inflammatory question, they always go, "We're just, after a loss, like we're just going to go back to the." I could tell you exactly what they'll say.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And it's just
we need to work harder.
We need to be better. And what they're saying generally is true, but it's not sexy. It's not controversial. It's like, yeah, you need to just go back and work harder and look at your act and keep breaking it down, and you know, because doing the work is not, it's not, it doesn't get headlines.
Well, to some extent, too. I mean, you know, any artistic endeavor, any artistic field, comedy, whatever it is, you have artistic people.
Right.
They might be sleeping in the morning. You know, there's sort of a mindset there that lends itself to not always doing the work.
Right.
Or not having the discipline to do the work.
Right.
So, you know, I think it's important to talk about and good to remind people that half of success in any artistic field is showing up, doing that work,
right.
And if you're amazingly talented but not able to do all that stuff, maybe you'll get lucky, but right. you probably won't because nobody's right. going to want to work with you.
Yeah, and I think that discipline also over a period of years, also, and it's like it helps if you have success. That's why it's important. Like, you got to celebrate the successes to keep you motivated to keep working, keep on that path. It's important.
Now, there's a lot of people who get into comedy that are like the naturally talented people who just kind of get it, who walk in off the street and good. It happens, you know. They're the people you were talking about, like on the wrestling team, who just came in, it comes to them naturally.
Yeah.
And then there's the comics who have to really put in the work to get good. And I used to think that people either had it or they didn't.
Right.
And I've been proven wrong a lot on that. There's some people I've seen who are really, really terrible, and I thought there was no hope for them, and I've seen them get much, much better.
Yeah.
But the work's important, and it's all about how your process and how you approach it and everything like that. So good on you, man. I'm rooting for you.
Yeah. Thank you, yeah. I didn't come in. I came in. There were guys more talented, but it's like athletics in a lot of ways. You're right. It's like athletics, and some guys come in football. They're just fast. They run like a 4.5 40.
Right.
They're fast. They're strong. So they have a better chance of success. But it's like, are those guys putting the work in? Are they disciplined? And they're gonna have a much different experience than someone else, you know, who's not as talented. So yeah, you're right. The work is, I would say, the most important.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with me too.
I think but it's also like, can I say this also?
Yeah.
For me personally, I'm always better when I'm balanced. Like, I found as I've gotten older, but I think this would have applied in my younger days too. It's like this is going to sound how it sounds, but it's like getting a workout in makes me feel mentally better. Meditation, I do hot yoga when I can do it. Like, all this stuff makes me feel better, and then I'm better at my writing. I'll have a writing spurt versus, you know what I mean, like being unhealthy. Like, being healthy really and well-rounded, and it helps me to write and perform at a higher level. Absolutely.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Because I feel like some of my most creative times are when things are falling apart. And I just need to find somewhere else to go to escape all that stuff.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, you have a life. I mean, I think in comedy that sort of idea of
I'm sitting here with you. He gets to leave. What are you telling me? Come on.
But I mean, you have a reasonable life and reasonable hours for the most part. I think a lot of times in comedy that idea of, oh, you stay up all night and you drink all night and you're doing the drugs in the club, that gets sort of fetishized.
I used to think that was a thing too, but I don't know. I guess everybody's different. and whatever works for what works for some people won't work for other people. But for me, I found that like when I'm balanced and when I feel good, I'll perform. My performance will be better. There's always something. There's always something too about your performance being mentally ready. I was not very good at this as an athlete. Like when I wrestled, getting mentally ready to go into a match. Like I'd practice hard, I'd work hard, I'd cut weight, I'd do all the necessary things. But then when match time came, I didn't have like a killer instinct, like mentally go out there ready to destroy. And I think that maybe I'm getting a second chance in comedy to make myself mentally ready for whether it's for a TV performance or like headlining. It's like you have to have yourself, there's a state that you've got to get yourself in where you're going to be more effective.
Now, that's very interesting to me, but I want to pause back to something you said, and it's really is a misnomer in comedy, and I'm really glad you just kind of brought it up, because I think I'd be very interested to hear your thoughts on this, Mike. The thought of the outlaw comic, you know what I'm talking about? Like the Sam Kinisons back in the day, the ones that everybody felt like were just, oh, we're going on a wild ride with this person.
Like the rock and roll kind of.
Yeah, that whole thing has definitely been fetishized, like you said. So it's like, a lot of people get into comedy with that's the mentality, but the reality of it is that's like nobody wants to deal with that anymore. No respectable clubs don't want to deal with that. They do, but you know, they don't want to deal with it.
I would think, and not to interrupt, you know, because I want to hear what you have to say about it. I would think that's a very rare, you know, we know those people, we know those names who have done that and did that. Some of them, you know, didn't live all that long, unfortunately, but I think that's sort of a rare, that's probably a rare person who can do that. You know what I mean? Who can be talented and be successful and also do all the stuff you were just talking about and live the kind of life you were just talking about. You know, the Sam Kinisons, if that's even an accurate representation of how he lived.
Right. I guess I'm
I feel
just saying,
like a lot of people probably can't do that, right?
Yeah. I don't think it lends itself to any kind of longevity.
Right. And I like what Mark Ippolito says here. He says, if you would like to be a professional, you have to respect the profession.
Right.
I mean, do you see a lot of people coming up with that mentality still, or do you feel like it's just kind of disappeared? Like the
outlaw mentality?
Yeah, the outlaw comedy mentality.
I mean, I don't see it. I see, and I haven't been like on, you know, I don't know. Like what I've seen coming up through New York, the guys I'm surrounded by are guys who are like, work hard and understand that they have to put their nose to the grindstone in order and are trying to do spots and try. It's like very like they're in New York City, which is, we have access to a lot of clubs and a lot of places to get up. So it's like, I'm in this city, I'm living uncomfortably so that I can have access to all these clubs. So it's like work and get better. So that's the mentality I really see. I don't see a lot of people, because if you just have like, you can get exposed, you know what I mean, if you're all bravado and no content, you know what I mean?
100%.
So, you know, I think there's not too much of that now. From what I see, the guys I see are guys who are working, trying to get better, trying to build an act. Yeah.
Right. Okay. I'm always curious about that because, you know, we're up here in Rochester, you're down there.
Right.
We see different things. I feel like the people who are down there really working hard are people who, a lot of them came from all over the world to be there to work at comedy.
Yeah.
And we get jokers. We get a bunch of jokers. Yeah. So just curious. Curious to hear.
I don't know, but I'm in my little, keep in mind that I'm in my little corner of the world.
That is true. You're also passed in a lot of those clubs. Yeah. So you probably have a little bit of an easier time these days than you would have if you were just walking in.
I have an easier time getting spots in New York, but I do not have an easier time getting spots in LA.
Really?
It's tougher to get spots in LA.
No love in LA for you?
No, it's not that there's no love. It's more of a struggle. In New York, I really don't have to, I'm blessed to the fact now I've been there long enough and worked hard enough where I don't really think about spots. You know, I don't have to think about, like, I do have to think about, I need it, I get it, but I'll just put in and get them.
Right.
So, and if I need to, I can always get up in New York. But in L.A., it's like, I can still get up, but I have to think about it and plot it. Like, I don't have to give it much thought in New York.
Right.
Yeah.
That's a wonderful place to be, though. It's a wonderful place
to
be in your career.
It's great, yeah. It's great.
All right. Well, Mike Vecchione is going to be here for 4 more shows this weekend. Yes. You get your tickets. Come see him tonight. Mike, your show is going to be exciting. I'm excited because you have RJ Purpura featuring for you.
Yes.
I love that kid.
Oh, yeah, he's great.
RJ is fantastic. Yeah. So yeah, you cannot go wrong this weekend. You got two great acts on the show. So make sure you come out. Who's emceeing this weekend? I'm not even sure. Probably three great acts on the show. But yeah. Mike's going to be your headliner. So come on, get your tickets, 5854comedy, or visit carlsoncomedy.com. And also make sure you check out Mike's podcast.
Yeah, absolutely.
Please do. Undisputed, yeah. Right?
No disrespect.
No disrespect.
No disrespect. On and it's available on iTunes or wherever. And if you could follow me on social media, whoever, if you're comedy fans, at Comic Mike V.
At Comic Mike V.
Yeah.
We're going to follow you.
Right now.
Right this very second.
Stop what we're doing.
We're going to be back with the news with Ross, so stick around, everybody, and we'll see you at the club this weekend.
Thanks, Mike.
Thank you for being awesome and watching another episode of the Carlson Cast. Don't forget we're streaming live on Facebook and YouTube every Friday morning. You could also follow us on social media on Twitter and Instagram at Carlson Cast. You can listen anytime on iTunes, Google Play, and we're now available on Spotify. You should also check out an amazing app called Laughable. And on the Laughable app, you can connect to your favorite comedians in a way you never thought you could before. Download it in the App Store and visit carlsoncast.com for information on more shows. And don't be a jerk. Rate and review. Uncomfortable silence. We're back. It's time for everyone's favorite uncomfortable, cringe-inducing segment. It's the news with Ross Johnson. Rosser, take it away.
We're going to start out with my favorite segment, Vinny. This is the one I like to call Who's Dead Now?
I already know.
Do you?
Yes.
All right.
I was very sad. I was.
Where's my glitter?
I woke up in the middle of the night, just sad.
Oh.
I knew it was happening.
It's just you got the
disturbance in the force.
Disturbance in the force. Absolutely. Yeah. Rip Taylor. Ah.
Gone.
You'd be mad at me if I started throwing glitter around. I wanted to.
What
Gone.
A flattering photo.
Dead. Yeah. He's a good-looking guy. So, 1970s TV mainstay Rip Taylor. He died on October 6th in Beverly Hills. He was 88 years old, although he had like all homosexual men of a certain age, he had had a few different ages at different points.
So here's the thing. I don't think he was ever out.
Well, it was a little ambiguous. He had a longtime partner.
Uh-huh.
That
what was her name?
The one who was a Robert.
Okay.
There were a couple times where people had sort of said that, you know, just assumed that that was the case or asked him directly.
And he got
was
upset.
Like, yeah, he got sort of upset. So I don't know if it was, I don't know what the deal was, but I don't have too many doubts myself. I don't know. I don't want to speak for the deceased Mr. Taylor, but he had been in the army during the Korean War. He started doing stand-up right around that time. He did the Ed Sullivan Show and all those things. So
he never really struck me as an army guy.
No, you wouldn't think so. That was an interesting detail, I thought.
Can you imagine what would have been like in the foxholes with Rip Taylor?
Hey!
Hello, everyone!
Hey, welcome!
Just stuff's popping out of muskets that isn't bullets.
The Korean! Yeah, he just shoots a gun and glitter pops out, yeah. So, dead. He was in Wayne's World 2. He was also in... Jackass. So he had a long and interesting, impressive career. So
he did. Rip. R.I.P. Yeah. Rip.
Rip. So in slightly better news, Artie Lang. We sort of like to keep up with Artie Lang. Still alive.
Hey.
We're very happy to hear about that. He is starting a new podcast called Artie Lang's Halfway House.
Oh. I get it.
Get it?
Look at that nose on that cartoon. Totally normal.
Totally reasonable.
That's a reasonable nose on that cartoon.
Yeah, so that's going to start in November. The last time he was on a podcast was the Artie and Anthony Show, which ended last year. Shortly before he was sentenced to 4 years of drug probation.
I don't think that show went very long.
I don't think it had
a very long run.
Correct.
Because Anthony replaced Artie, I believe, with a guy named Dave Landau.
Yeah.
Who is another comic.
Yeah, Artie was basically fired from that show, but I don't know that he had a choice.
Could you imagine Anthony Cumia having to fire you?
Well...
Do you realize how much of a screw-up you have to be?
That's kind of Artie's had a few lows.
Right.
I think that's definitely one of them. But he's been sober for a while now. He's out of rehab, so hopefully this goes a little better. He says that he wants to make amends to Howard Stern. He wants to apologize and talk to him.
I'll bet.
I don't know why you wouldn't just do that as opposed to telling. I don't think Howard will talk to him. That you want to. I don't know.
I'm pretty sure that's what I've heard is that Howard doesn't want to talk to him.
I think from what I've seen over the years, it seems like Artie burned some of those bridges, because I know he said some crappy crappy things about, like, oh, the Howard Stern show isn't what it used to be and blah blah blah. Well, which probably doesn't help if you've already kind of got a strained relationship.
So I'll go ahead and give a plug. I've learned one thing from Who Are These Podcasts, my buddy Carl's show.
Okay.
Is that most of these ex-Stern people immediately go to bashing him.
Mm.
Immediately go to the internet and start bashing him. That Steve Grillo was bashing him, Stuttering John Melendez bashes him, Artie bashed him. I mean, those people really, I mean, nothing against Artie. He was in a couple of movies. I love Dirty Work and everything like that. Yeah. But Stern is what put the guy on the map.
Right.
And I don't know why everybody always just goes after the guy. I mean.
Yeah, and it never seems, and I've seen some of that too, and it's never specific in a way where you're like, oh, okay, so we've learned that Howard Stern, you know, beats all the people that works for him or whatever. It's always sort of like, oh, the show's not very good anymore. It's weird. You're right. Because you.
There's always, it always feels like there's sour grapes with everybody that leaves there.
Yeah.
But, yeah. And then, I mean, even what's his name? The Joke Man, Jackie Martling.
Right.
And, like, he's made amends and is back in the boat with all those guys and everything now. But I've heard interviews with him on other shows where he was just, you know, but Howard also beats those guys up pretty bad. Absolutely. After they leave. So I feel like it's probably a two-way street.
Yeah.
But either way, maybe Howard, he's been doing the media interviews and all this stuff, talking about how he loves therapy and how he's in therapy. Maybe the two of them can.
Yeah, I hope so. I mean,
reconcile.
I'd like a story about people being friends again.
Yeah.
So hopefully that works out.
Yeah, I'd rather listen to them complain about each other, to be honest with you. It's better radio.
Oh, see, like, why can't they be friends and hug?
Yeah, well, that's why you're not a programmer.
I know, absolutely.
Read the news.
So we have
stop with your peacenik stuff.
There was a lot of stuff about. There's been a lot of stuff about Eddie Murphy. We've been talking about on the show. Eddie Murphy's kind of been on a little bit of a, not that he ever went away, but he's been on a little bit of a comeback tour.
I'd say he went away.
Well, yeah, I guess he went away.
He did a couple of movies. I mean, he did those Daddy Daycare movies were like the last big ones that he did, if I recall, that were hits.
Yeah.
And those were early 2000s.
Yeah, so I guess he did go away. So he's got a bunch of stuff lined up. He's got the new Coming to America coming out next year. I guess they're doing a new Beverly Hills Cop now. Dolomite Is My Name, I guess, is already getting some awards buzz. That's going to pop up on Netflix in a couple weeks. He's playing Rudy Ray Moore, the actual Dolomite guy. But I thought this was interesting. So we had talked about Eddie Murphy and his old stand-up and how that would play today. And he actually addressed that in a recent interview. He said he cringes when he watches his old stand-up jokes about AIDS, women, and homosexuality. He said he described himself as a young guy processing a broken heart when he recorded it, and he feels like he comes off as kind of an asshole. So, you know, good for him, I guess, to be able to... I know people get very agitated about anything related to, oh, you had a comedy thing and you said something controversial. So I'm sure people are mad at him for saying he feels bad about it, but I don't know. I say good for him, you know, to look at that and say, this is fine. He's not saying nobody watched this anymore, but these jokes were maybe not perfect.
I remember watching him on Netflix, and I'm sure the reason they put him on Netflix was just as a test to see if he was worth paying all that money to before they signed him.
Right.
Just to see how many downloads it would get. And I sat there and I said it on the show. I was watching it and going, this is not going to hold up. This would never hold up. And then all of a sudden they announced he's doing a special. And I've been waiting to hear something out of how he's going to approach this, because not for nothing, I'm not saying he's not funny. You give me that bit about his brother-in-law's wife being Bigfoot, I'll laugh all day. He's hysterical.
Oh, he's enormously talented.
Yeah. So I don't think he needs that stuff. And it's nice to hear that he's not necessarily going down that road.
Well, that's it. And what is he from a marketing, and I'm assuming he's sincere, but from a marketing standpoint, what does he gain by being like, no, these jokes are great, why is everybody, he gains nothing.
Here's the more interesting point. Marketing wise, that stuff never hurt him.
Right.
An ounce. Never hurt him an ounce. He's one of the biggest movie stars in the world.
Yeah. Well, and at the time, you know, it was a different time.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, he was an edgy comedian in a time where...
I want him to be on top. I want him to be out there and killing it. But my worry was the stuff never hurt him before.
Right.
So I just thought maybe he would march into this like, it didn't hurt me then.
Right, absolutely. But I don't know. I feel like that's sort of a classy response.
Good for him, man. Yeah. Eddie Murphy, class act. You don't need that from me. You don't need anything from me. I'll shut up.
But if you're listening,
We salute you. I'm looking forward to that. Dolomite Is My Name. It looks pretty good. Finally, other stand-up comedy in the news. The Joker movie. What's the big thing right now? The Joker movie, starring Joaquin Phoenix as renowned stand-up comedian Arthur Fleck, the Joker. That's in its second week. That is, it's surpassed Shazam. It's made a ton of money. It's made about $135 million domestic in a week and a half.
How many people dead in the theaters watching it? None?
Up 47.
47 dead.
Yep,
okay.
47 dead. But $135 million, so that's a trade-off that maybe you're just going to take. But
sure, if I'm the movie company.
He's Robert De Niro's in that. His big stand-up moment in the movie is, of course, with Robert De Niro. So that for all the controversy, that movie seems to be doing fine. So I guess edgy stand-up comedy.
Did you see it?
I did not see it.
Okay. So I watched it.
Okay.
I went and watched it actually opening day. I didn't realize it was opening day. Mm-hmm. Last Friday, a week ago.
Did you get killed?
I went after the show last week. And no, I did not. I was one of the lucky survivors.
Good.
If you've never seen a little movie called The King of Comedy, and you've seen Joker, they are of the same ilk. Like,
okay.
This is, there is literally giant nods to King of Comedy, which was a Martin Scorsese movie. And Martin Scorsese was supposedly one of the original producers for this Joker movie.
Okay.
And that's why I didn't know De Niro was in it.
Okay.
And when I saw De Niro, and the very first scene where he's watching De Niro be the host of this talk show, I'm not going to spoil anything for anybody, but it is a direct homage to King of Comedy, and I thought that was very cool.
Oh, interesting.
Because it's one of my favorite dark comedies. If you've never seen it, check it out.
Better even than The Joker? Or Joker? I think it's just
Joker. I left Joker not knowing what to think of that movie.
All right.
I did not think it was bad at all. I don't know why everybody hates it.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was chilling at times. I was crawling out of my skin,
mm-hmm.
watching skinny-ass Joaquin Phoenix like sit on a couch with his ribs and just stretch. Like, it's weird.
Watch
like,
that
there's
for
weird.
Hours.
No. It's just like, ugh. Like, it makes you uncomfortable. They did. Mm-hmm. This is a special movie. What it's capturing, I don't know if it's good for us or bad for us. I would say go watch and decide for yourself. All right, that's the end of the show today because we got to get out of here. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for watching. We appreciate you. We love you. Thank you for downloading. Tell a friend. Leave a review. That's all we could ever ask of you. Thanks to Mike Vecchione for being our guest. And we're going to be back next week on Thursday. We're not going to be doing a show Friday morning. We're going to be doing Thursday morning. So keep that in mind. Sashir Zameda will be our guest.
Oh, nice.
We'll see you then. Thank you. Good afternoon.